What's up, everybody? The Mouths of the South podcast. Golden Spike Week continues as we are getting ready for MLS Cup Saturday night. I am thrilled, beyond thrilled, to be joined once again here on the Mouths of the South by Kevin Egan, the play-by-play man on the television side for the Fox Sports South games for Atlanta United. You can also catch him on BN Sports, The Extra, which is every weeknight. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, Sam, what a pleasure. What a week. Are you excited?
I am very, very excited. You know, the city of Atlanta has been clamoring for a championship. Atlanta United have a big, big game and a chance to bring the city its first major championship since the Braves in 1995. So we're humming around here.
Yeah, I'd say so. And I can't wait to get in. Obviously, I'm based in Miami, Florida, with BN Sports Monday to Friday, as you mentioned. But first thing Saturday morning, I'm on an early flight. My wife is 35 weeks pregnant now at this stage, so I'll stay with her Friday night and then head off first thing, and hopefully, you know, I'm sticking around Atlanta for a bit and celebrating.
Yeah, no doubt. Hopefully a lot to celebrate coming up Saturday night. And we'll go ahead and dive in here. Before we get into the actual game, Joseph Martinez just named MLS MVP, finishing in second. His very good friend Miguel Almiron, who the rumors are saying is off to the Premier League. But for them to finish 1-2 in the MVP like that, I mean, look, Joseph was a shoe-in for this. He ran away with a golden boot, smashing the single-season goal-scoring record for MLS. But for the two of them to finish 1-2 like that, as good of friends as they are, has got to be cool for both of them. Although Miggy might, you know, maybe a little jealous.
Yeah, I don't think he would be, though, and that's him, because in games throughout the season, we've seen Miguel set up Joseph at moments when he could potentially shoot himself, and that's the relationship between the pair. Joseph is that ruthless goal scorer that will do everything he can to put the ball in the back of the net and take that glory, and Miguel is the assist guy that will drop deeper and make it happen for his teammate. And I certainly, when it comes to Miguel, I just enjoy watching him play. I hate looking at stats with Miguel because he does so much more than the statistics, whereas Joseph is someone who you really do hone in on the stats because that's who he is. He's your ruthless goal scorer. And I think this season with Martinez, he's found a way to do it in different ways. He's been the penalty king. He's also scored with his trusty right boot. But then at times, I think back to some big moments this season where he's finished impeccably with his left foot. You think about the goal against Columbus. That was the record holder, the 27-goal haul that he hit against the Crew at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Was a great shot where he beat Zach Steffen with his left foot. What you think about the goal he scored against the Red Bulls at home when Laurentiis picked out that perfect pass and Joseph chests it down and finishes with his left foot. And then, of course, you know, what is he, 5'6", 5'7", he manages to score many goals with his head. So I call him the Venezuelan Viper for a reason, because he happens to drift in and out. And then just when you think you don't suspect he's going to do anything, he absolutely capitalizes in the most ruthless of ways. Similar to maybe a Mauro Icardi, that sort of a player. And I just love watching him.
Yeah, and he has come out and said how happy he is in Atlanta. I think a lot of people, just because of maybe some of the stigma that comes with MLS, I'm sure a lot of people fear that Martinez might be a guy that is going to be sold, just like you're hearing all these rumors with Almiron. But for Martinez to come out and say that he wants to stay at Atlanta United for as long as Atlanta will have him and that he's super happy here, I think it just goes to show you that he's a guy that's been over to Europe, and maybe for him it wasn't all it's cracked up to be, and he comes to a city in Atlanta where, you know, he's being treated like a king. And he's got a very big South American population, and he can go to all the Latin American clubs we have in Atlanta, which, again, he's closer to home. So these are all things that give Atlanta such an advantage mm-hmm. for a player like that.
Absolutely. Sam, I had a chat with my father, Liam, today in Dublin. He called me this morning, and we were just chatting about the game. And him and my mom they'd stayed up till the very early hours of the morning with their Atlanta United scarves on and polos, and they're watching the games and enjoying it. And he's been on to me confirming the time of the game, my dad, because there's been two conflicting times, and I'm telling him, no, it's a 1 a.m. kickoff in Dublin. So, you know, stay up late. You're going to be up till 3:15 to watch it. And he's asked me about the future of Almiron and Joseph. And for Miguel Almiron, it's a different look. It's someone who's come across from Lanús, who's played in South America, who still has that allure and sees the allure of Europe, whereas Joseph has been there and he hasn't had tremendous success. You know, he played well in Switzerland. He scored, what, 7 goals in about 56 games or something like that while he was with Torino in Serie A in a very difficult league. Now he's the king. He comes to Atlanta. He's playing in arguably the best stadium in the world. He is the MVP. He's the record goal scorer. He is the star in Atlanta amongst all the great stars that there are today and in previous years. So wherever he goes, he's not going to have maybe the setup that he's had with Atlanta United this year, in that Tata Martino has a system in place that plays perfectly into his hands. And he's not going to have the setup that he has today in terms of the celebrity status and, you know, the cult hero that he is today too. So for Joseph, you can certainly see he's a fan of the Braves. He's a fan of other sports as well as many other things outside of the sports world. So for him, I think it's a great setup. Whereas Miggy, it's been well discussed and documented. I think he may leave this offseason.
Well, and because of the love of the Braves kind of that you mentioned there, it's so interesting looking at sort of an Atlanta breakdown. I mean, he is in rare company here because the city of Atlanta, in terms of the major professional sports, have only had a few MVPs. The Braves have had 3. Dale Murphy did it twice, Chipper Jones and Terry Pendleton. And the Falcons had Matt Ryan. The Hawks have never had one in Atlanta. So you just talk about, just to echo what you were saying there, I mean, this guy has reached that cult status, and he is one of the most popular figures in Atlanta right now in terms of not just, you know, sports, but just celebrities of the city.
And all you have to think about is the gap in time between today and the last championship for Atlanta. And that's, what, 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in MVPs, but that didn't go on to win the championship. So I'm going to double down on what you said and say if Joseph wins the MVP and then he can go on and he can lift MLS Cup with the 5 stripes, well, then he's in a realm of his own.
Absolutely, because as you mentioned, all of the players that we mentioned in the year they won the MVP did not go on to win a championship. So you're totally right. That's one that could, you know, put him into his own stratosphere there. But getting to this game, you asked me before we came on here if I was feeling nervous, and I told you after the first leg against New York, not really, because I think that would have been the moment that I would have said, okay, that this, you know, New York's a team that Atlanta hasn't beaten ever, and they come out and convincingly beat them 3-0 with some great goals, including one of my favorite all-time Atlanta United goals scored by Tito Villalba there, the one that really sort of gave you a lot better of a feeling going into that second leg in New York. So this team, again, is kind of humming, clicking on all cylinders right now, having great form in these playoffs. And you've got to figure that if they go out, play their game, Portland has to come to their house, you know, and try to get a result. So I think that you look at this team and the way that they're playing right now, you have to favor them to win this game.
Sam, what happened? This is what I really want to know. What happened after the loss against Toronto? There had to have been a day break on the Monday. The game was on the Sunday. Then they go back to training, and they've got a little bit of a gap because they don't have to play in that midweek play-in game. But what did Tata Martino say? What did he do to reinvigorate this side and find the legs, first and foremost, because the team looked tired in Toronto, and they played, and I was there, and I walked the field with Dan Gargan, and we have this tradition where we like to get out on the pitch and walk around the surface, and we both said, this is going to be really difficult to pass the ball on. And Toronto capitalized on the counterattack, and they were ruthless in doing so, and Atlanta United, in truth, didn't show up. And then what happened between that and the next performance against NYCFC? Because it was a completely different team. Now, the obvious thing to say is that Miguel Almirón returned, and we all know the importance of Miguel in this team. Tito Villalba became a lot fitter in that time, too, but something changed with the mentality of the group. And I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, the timing of announcing that Tata Martino was going to leave at the end of the season. And there just seemed to be this togetherness amongst the team that, right, this is it. Let's do it as a unit. Let's do it as a group. You have a captain in Michael Parkhurst who's been there before too many times without lifting MLS Cup. Jeff Laurentiis has been there in the past as well. He picked up one with Colorado. So you've got the experienced American older leaders in this team. You've got the young American core. And then you've got the ones from outside. It's such an incredibly diverse group. The ones from outside that really don't know any different. They don't know about the Atlanta sports culture. They don't know about the team collapsing, or other teams, I should say, collapsing in big moments. And I just love the way this team has come together. And I didn't have a good feeling, if I'm honest, before the game against Toronto. Both Dan and I discussed that. We saw the lineup and we wondered where the goals were going to come from. And there just wasn't this positive momentum and feeling about the game. That's there now. Now, you get by in two-legged affairs against the two sides of New York, and you do it in different ways, but NYCFC have not been the same since Patrick Vieira left, and New York Red Bulls self-destructed with Chris Armas changing things around completely. Now, massive credit has to go to Atlanta United and the way the team approached the game, and certainly the way they executed. But now you come up against a side in Portland Timbers. The big benefit is that this is a one-off affair. You don't have to go to the Pacific Northwest. You can get the job done in Georgia. But the negative is that this is a side that comes in with huge momentum, are completely and utterly comfortable within their own skin and the way they play. And they've got a wonderful feeling about the side now under Gio Savarese. It didn't start that way, but the way he's turned around this team and the performances from Diego Valeri make me believe that this is going to be a really close affair.
Absolutely. I mean, I told you as well that I'd probably be a little more nervous about Portland than I would have been about Kansas City, just because I think Kansas City might be more of a solid team and harder to break down. But at the same time, I don't worry about them as much on offense as I do Portland, because Portland has the danger men, Diego Valeri, Sebastian Blanco, and they have a guy in Chara who has done such a wonderful job for them in terms of being that sort of, you know, Remedy, Jeff Lorenowitz type player. And it really is just one of these things where that moment of magic could come out of nowhere, as we saw in the second leg against Kansas City, where Sebastian Blanco hit one of the best goals we've seen this season.
And that's the thread. And a lot of the analysis seems to be that Atlanta United need to score first, get out there, hammer Portland, and then force them to come out of their shell. But Portland, they're comfortable coming out of their shell. And they were a goal down against Sporting Kansas City. And it was Blanco that, you rightly say, provided that moment of magic for them on the road. And they get it done with Valeri using his head as well as his footballing ability. I just think they're a team that's got talent in lots of different areas. Out wide, they've got potential too. But man for man, I'm looking at the matchups thinking Atlanta United can drag them out of shape. Atlanta United have more talent on the field. And I'm really curious to see what Tata Martino does. My head says that he's going to go with the same 11, that he's going to go with Escobar out on the right-hand side, Gressel in the midfield role, and Tito on the bench. But that's the one thing that I'm wondering about. Is that the one change that Tata would go with? Just to make this team a little bit more creative on the attack, with that little bit more of a dynamic look, and with Julian Gressel's right foot hugging the touchline. You know, you keep Julian in that right-wing back role, you move Tito Villalba further forward, Franco drops to the bench. That's something that he could do. I just feel that with the performances we've seen in the playoffs, Tata's not going to move things, and he's going to keep it as it is. But who knows? Tata Martino's changed a lot of things in the past. But if there was one thing I'd bet on right now, I think I'd bet on that 3-5-2, because they can attack in numbers, and at least with Jeff Lorenzowitz, Parkhurst, and LGP at the back, you're in safe hands. And the one player I want to point out here today, Sam, is Eric Rometty. You know, since he's come to Atlanta United, there hasn't been a loss at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That is a wonderful thing to look at. He has provided so much of what Carlos Carmona did, and the comparisons are very fair, because he gets from flank to flank, supporting the wing-backs, supporting the full-backs, and he's just that pit bull in midfield that the team needs against a guy that you mentioned like Achara.
And it's crazy, too, because you look at a guy like Darlington Nagbe, played many years in Portland, was a vital cog when they won MLS Cup. And I was interviewing Alexi Lalas earlier this week, and he was sort of surprised at the fact that they just let him go, you know, to Atlanta the way that they did, particularly because of, you know, how easily he's gelled into this Atlanta system. And you can tell, because at times in his career he's been playing out of position. You know, Jurgen Klinsmann and he had a pretty public spat about where he should be playing, so kind of Nagbe just took his ball and went home. But in this system under Tata Martino, he's flourishing, he's thriving, he seems to be having fun. Still hasn't scored his first goal, and what a story it would be if he did it on Saturday. But he has become just such a vital player for this team in terms of linking the defense to the attack and sending those balls into the final third.
Yeah, you nailed it. You just nailed it. Sending, switching the ball from defense into attack is his game. And I think that a three-man midfield with Darlington Nagbe on the right-hand side is his perfect position. And the player I've always compared Darlington Nagby to, and I have with you here on this very show, is Luka Modric. I just feel he's got this great ability to turn on a dime and find the right pass out wide, whether it's a Vialga or a Martinez. And I remember a goal earlier on in the season where Nagby took it from a central defender and he played the most perfectly weighted pass to Tito on the run, who then crossed it first time to Joseph Martinez, who scored. And that's his game. And if you were to measure Darlington on stats and stats alone, well, look for secondary assists, if those even exist, and I don't think they do. I'm not the biggest stats guy, as you can tell, because I think that there's so many different variables in a game of soccer that you really need to study. And just watching a Darlington Nagby, and I was at the New York Red Bulls game, I travelled up just to enjoy the match in Harrison, New Jersey, and watching him drift into the open spaces makes me think that Tata Martino's had a major impact on Darlington Nagby's game. His ability to receive the ball in space and use his head to find those gaps and then always find the right pass. He compliments Remedy, Remedy compliments him, and I think Atlanta United has taken his game to a new level under Tata that he didn't have. And he always used to come in for criticism about his numbers, and it used to wreck my head, because that's not Darlington's game. And he's finally, I think, been really appreciated in Atlanta, and wouldn't it be a story if he could go and get his first goal in MLS Cup against the team that he won the championship with in 2015?
Yeah, and you mentioned something, and this is kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent here for a second, but it's interesting because you're talking about Tata Martino and his ability to get the best out of a guy like Darlington Nagby, figure out what his role, best role is, and put him in it and see Darlington Nagby thrive in it. It was so weird to me the way that U.S. Soccer approached their hiring process, and Ernie Stewart early on, the sort of general manager of U.S. Soccer now, coming out early in the process saying that, you know, proficiency in English would be a requirement of their manager, and sort of just eliminating a guy like Tata Martino, who speaks pretty good English, by the way, right off the bat, and they hire Greg Berhalter, and that could end up being an okay hire, but for a guy like Tata Martino to not even get like a call or a look just seems like a big misstep and oversight from U.S. Soccer to me.
Yeah, no question. I'm kind of glad you brought this topic up, actually, because I've been defending Greg Berhalter here a lot. I finished up on the show The Extra the other night, and I said I'd peek in on the locker room studio here at beIN Sports, Kay Murray with the likes of Ray Hudson and Phil Shane, Gary Bailey on the show, and I started listening in to the debate about Greg Berhalter. And I felt I needed to jump in, so I ran into the control room and I said to the producer, hey, can I crash the show? I've got a mic on, can you patch my mic up? And then Kay Murray could see me, and the producer told her, and she said, hey, guys, Kevin Egan clearly disagrees with something. So I crashed the show, which was a lot of fun. And I did my best to stick up for Greg Berhalter, because I feel as someone who's been involved in Major League Soccer, who's had a chance to watch Columbus play, most weeks I make an effort to watch this team play because I actually really like Greg Berhalter as a coach. Now, here's the thing. The fact that they didn't interview Tata Martino is a bit of a joke in and of itself. It is. Tata Martino is an excellent coach that should have been interviewed for the job. I felt that 13 months ago, one of the people they should have gone after as well as Tata was Patrick Vieira, someone that knows Major League Soccer, someone that has a clear, identifiable way of playing the game, who's a very smart, young, upcoming coach with experience both as a World Cup champion and experience as a Major League Soccer coach. But they didn't do that. He went to Nice. Now, Greg Berhalter, it's done. The process is over. It's done. I didn't like a lot about it, but I do like him as a coach. And I think if I was to pick out two Atlanta United players that I think will prosper from Greg Berhalter getting the job as U.S. Men's National League coach, I'm going to go with George Bello, and I'm going to go with Andrew Carlton. And I know those are names that are extremely young, and those players are yet to really be tested truly week in, week out in MLS. But Greg Berhalter loves attack-minded, athletic fullbacks. George Bello is going to be a star, and George Bello is that left back that the U.S., for me, doesn't have. And everyone's talking about who's going to be the Higuain, who can play as the link guy in behind the main striker. And if Andrew Carlton can get more game time with whoever the new coach is going to be, I think he's going to be the one in 3 years' time from now that could really be pushing on if he can fulfill his potential. And he's that perfect player that the U.S. doesn't produce very often that could suit a Greg Berhalter style.
And kind of led right into my next question, who his manager is going to be next season on the club level. With Tata Martino departing, there are definitely some rumors. I've seen Schelotto, the manager for Boca Juniors, being mentioned. And a name that I saw that, you know, wasn't necessarily a rumor, but more of a suggestion that, hey, if the Atlanta United Brass are going down to Argentina to talk to coaches, they should talk to this guy, Gabriel Heinze. I mean, he was such a great player for Manchester United and Real Madrid, that kind of pit bull type mentality, a take no prisoners fullback, and a guy that, again, you know, Scalotto has this, but Heinze would too, just that connection to South America and continuing that pipeline that Atlanta United has. But who are some of the names, you know, other than, or of course you can talk about those guys too, but just this hire is going to be mega important for Atlanta United.
Hugely important. What an off-season we are in for, folks. I'm telling you, this is going to be life-changing for a lot of people, because Atlanta United need to go and win this weekend, because they're saying goodbye to Tata, most likely Miguel Almiron as well. Pity Martinez is rumored to be replacing him. So instantly, you see a change in style. You don't have that rock and roll style under Tata, where Miguel Almiron is set free and he's allowed to use his legs to the best of his ability. Pity Martinez is much more of a possession-orientated, intricate, tricky style player, as is Ezequiel Barco. So Ezequiel Barco, Pity Martinez, they might work well together in behind Joseph Martinez. It's something to look forward to. But I don't know who it's going to be. And I honestly have a feeling with the way Atlanta United do business and the way Darren Eales does his business, we could be in for a surprise. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be as predictable as we all think. I know that, you know, about a month or so ago, whenever we got word of Tata leaving, I sat down at my kitchen table, having my coffee one morning, and I did up a list of all the names that I think could work. There's a few older guys. I wonder, will they go for someone young, like an Heinze? Like you say, now, if I'm honest, I haven't studied someone like Gabriel Heinze yet. I cover La Liga on a daily basis, and I can tell you that there's someone called Eduardo Berizzo, who is a 49-year-old Argentine who's a very good manager, but he's had a bit of a rough run lately. He actually had cancer, and he's all clear now from that. But he's had a rough run with Athletic Club Bilbao, and he's been released only this week. But he's a good coach, and from his time at Celta Vigo, played some really attractive football. So he's an option. The other one that I think, if you want to continue on the Argentine route, is Ricardo Gareca, who's the current manager of Peru. And they play some remarkable football. They're such a joy to watch. I don't know if you necessarily see that attractive style from Scalotto at Boca Juniors. I have kind of, if I'm honest, jumped on the Copa Libertadores bandwagon the same way a lot of people have of late. And I just haven't had time to watch a lot of their games. And I kind of rely on someone like Felipe Cardenas for advice, mm-hmm. and some of the friends here at BN Sports for those teams. But I know Eduardo Berizzo is a manager. Arsene Wenger is also someone available, and we laugh at the thought of that. But Arsene Wenger, we laugh, but Arsene Wenger is an incredible coach, and Arsene Wenger would play attractive soccer, and Arsene Wenger is someone that I think would garner the respect of everybody within the game, because he's been, and he is, a legend in the game. The question is he too old, and are we going backward with someone like Arsene Wenger, knowing that he's coming to the end of his career?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's such an important hire, and we've trusted the Atlanta United front office to make the right decisions because they have done that, and hopefully they will do that again here. Kind of one more thing before we get back to the Cup Final here, and it's a name that you mentioned a minute ago, Ezequiel Barco. Would you say, because of his price tag, that season one in MLS was a disappointment? I mean, I know there was some off-the-field stuff that we don't necessarily have to go into here, but just overall, he never could really, once Atlanta United was fully healthy, could never crack that lineup again. And it just seemed like when he would come into the games, because of the way it seemed like, A, that he and Almiron were not complementary players, and maybe with Miguel leaving or potentially leaving, he could find his way in a little bit more and be more comfortable. But it seemed that his sort of more methodical possession style was counteractive to what Atlanta United wanted to do.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. And like I alluded to with Pity Martinez, they may complement each other an awful lot more. I think Ezequiel Barco has tremendous talent, but there's so many frustrating elements of his game that we all saw this season. And I don't think, if the price tag wasn't there for all to see, I think we'd be looking at a 19-year-old saying, this guy has so much potential, this guy's going to be a star. But the fact that we know, and the number is out there publicly, that Atlanta United paid, what, $15 million or so for him, you instantly expect an awful lot more. $15 million nowadays on the global transfer market gets you, you know, what name the player. I mean, it gets you an Ezequiel Barco. He is a $15 million player, but it's just that it was unprecedented in Major League Soccer that's why we question it. But I think Ezequiel Barco at 19 can become a star. He can become, but he's got to mature. He's got to mature as a footballer. He's got to mature on and off the field. It's a big move for him to leave from Argentina, come across to Atlanta, Georgia. Huge cultural shift. And he's got to also, you know, bulk up a little bit, become a little bit tougher. You see diminutive players. You look at a Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi will get kicked around the park all day, but Lionel Messi finds a way to deal with it. And Ezequiel Barco hasn't found that yet. But sure, look, Neymar hasn't found that yet, and we make fun of him all the time for hitting the deck. Barco needs to maybe toughen up a little bit and mature a little bit, but he's still so young. You know, I'd hate to tell you what I was doing at 19 years of age, you know, and I can hazard a guess at what you were doing at 19 years of age, Sam. So it's a difficult road for him, but absolutely, with professional sports, there comes great responsibility and there comes expectation as well. So I think 2019 needs to be a big year for Barco.
On the satellite radio edition of this podcast, both Kevin and I will go into what we were doing at 19 years of age. Unfortunately, we cannot do that right here. Getting back to MLS Cup, the final, and I'll just ask it like this. Atlanta United lift the MLS Cup if...
Atlanta United lift MLS Cup if the team can show a ruthless streak that we've seen of late. If the team you know, has one of those games like they had against Columbus Crew in the playoff game midweek last year, it could be a struggle because Portland Timbers have enough to punish Atlanta on the other end. But if Joseph Martinez can get an opening early in the game and Atlanta can score, we expect the 75,000 people inside Mercedes-Benz to be on their feet anyway. We expect them to be rowdy and proud anyway and raucous inside the stadium. But if Joseph Martinez can score, I truly believe the fans will blow the roof off the place. And Atlanta United can go on and score a second and a third. And I've heard this prediction from a few different people, but I also agree. I'm going to go 3-1 Atlanta United.
That was exactly my prediction. I just think that, again, Atlanta are going to be a little bit too much in terms of the environment, just everything about it, in terms of hosting the game. I'm not saying that's what's going to win Atlanta the Cup, but that home field advantage is unlike anything MLS has ever seen, particularly when it's going to be over 75,000 mad raving fans who are thirsty for a championship. So, you know, I think...
Hey, Sam,
yes.
Think about this. Think about a few years ago when this game used to be played at a neutral venue and the lack of atmosphere at certain games,
right,
because a lot of fans just couldn't travel. Now you think about the game last year and the year before, frigid temperatures at Toronto, Ontario. Now you've got a roof. You've got an electric atmosphere inside the best stadium in the world with all sorts of celebrities. I don't know if you know this, but we did a top five here on beIN Sports. We do our top five every day on The Extra, random top fives. Yesterday was a top five of a lot of the biggest stars right now that are playing for clubs that you wouldn't exactly consider elite that teams will be after in the January transfer window. And one of the things we focused on a while ago was, who are the five coolest teams in the world? I said nothing at my meeting because I know I have Atlanta United ties. And our team on my show, The Extra, voted Atlanta United in at number 3, I think it was. In world soccer, Atlanta United, for them, that some of them don't even follow Major League Soccer, whether it be the kits, whether it be the celebrity aspect inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the fact that you've just got to walk a flock of pain his own way to fly to Harrison, New Jersey to see the team qualify for MLS Cup, whether you've got Big Boy or Zach Brown, you know, it's just ridiculous to think how far this team has come. And sometimes we can be in our own bubble, but we all need to recognize how cool Atlanta United is on a global front right now. And I mean it when I say that the stadium will be blown off by the atmosphere inside the stadium, the watching world, and hopefully Joseph Martinez, Miguel Almirón, and co. lifting MLS Cup and bringing a championship back to Atlanta.
All right, Kevin, I'm putting you on the spot here. If Atlanta United win on Saturday night, you and I have to lead a crowd of fans like the Pied Piper the less than a mile walk down the street to Waffle House, and it's waffles on you and me for whoever wants them.
Waffling all the way home, buddy. Can't wait for it.
Awesome, awesome stuff. Kevin, thank you so much. You can catch him on The Extra on beIN Sport every weeknight. And, of course, calling Atlanta United games on Fox Sports South. Really quickly, what are you going to be involved with on Saturday in terms of coverage?
Yeah, it's going to be a busy day. So I'm involved with Fox Sports South. We're going to have some tactical previews with myself and Dan Gargan in the build-up. So make sure you follow all the social platforms. I plan on joining Jason Longshore and Mike Conti on the pregame show on radio for a little bit too. And I think I'm involved in one or two things around the stadium. You may hear my voice in the stadium before the game, introducing one or two people. And then I'm going to stick around. Hopefully with a win, I'll be involved in some post-celebrations as well. So lots to get to, as well as I'm going to try and bring the action to be in sports social platforms too. So it's going to be busy, but I plan on enjoying every single second of it.
Awesome, Kevin. Well, we will see you on Saturday. Looking forward to it, and hopefully we'll be able to sing late into the night with Atlanta United lifting the trophy. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Cheers, Sam. Take care.